I'm Sarah, and welcome to the Chess Girls DC podcast. Chess Girls DC is a nonprofit organization that aims to build the confidence of girls using chess as a tool. In this podcast, we bring in guest speakers from all walks of life to talk about how skills gained from playing chess are instrumental, not only in becoming a better player, but in lifelong endeavors beyond the game.
And I'm your co-host, Fiona Lamb, and we're really fortunate to be joined today by Judge Sherry Beatty Arthur. Judge Beatty Arthur was appointed to the Office of Administrative Hearings in July 2014 and reappointed in 2016. She presides over cases with the Department of Health, the Department of Human Services, the Department of Consumer and Regulatory Affairs, and much more. Judge Beatty Arthur has been a practicing attorney since 1999 and is an active participant in the Washington, D.C. legal community. Judge Beatty Arthur's legal practice has primarily been in the area of civil rights and employment law and has included legal positions with the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Judge Beatty Arthur teaches business ethics at the University of Maryland Graduate School of Business and teaches torts and administrative law at Howard University School of Law. She is also a native Washingtonian. Judge Beatty Arthur, thank you so much for being here today and welcome to the Chess Girls DC podcast.
Thank you. I'm completely honored. This is a wonderful opportunity, so I'm really happy to be here.
And now I'll hand it over to Sarah to ask our questions.
So Judge Arthur, why did you choose to become a judge, and what was your path to get there?
You know, it's ironic. You know, I've always been, when I was growing up, the idea that to be great, you had to be a doctor or a lawyer. Once the math got too complicated, the law seemed like a great way to go because I like to speak a lot. But the bottom line is that I never planned to be a judge. I always wanted to be a lawyer because, quite frankly, at a young age, I always thought that being a judge was, you know, beyond my reach because I couldn't necessarily see myself in a place like that. It's ironic that Chess Girls DC will be speaking to me because I played chess at a very young age as well. I'm not sure if you all knew that. You look like you didn't. I'm probably not very young, but young for me. I learned how to play chess at probably first grade, wow. So that was pretty early. And it was exciting because I was in a class full of mostly boys. There was only one other girl who played. And it became a challenge to beat every boy each time. And of course we did. But back to your original question, to be frank, I knew I had the ability, but in some ways I didn't necessarily see myself quite this far. For example, I was telling someone recently that when standardized tests would come, I would never be afraid because I knew I was going to test better than everybody in the class. But at the same time, I didn't necessarily see myself this far and perhaps this successful because in some ways I didn't necessarily see myself in that space. And I often think how much further I would have been had I known my power and known just how able I was to do those things. Because again, chess kind of gave me a sneak peek about the ability that I could play and compete with in every area of life. Because it takes a level of confidence that if you don't have the confidence, you will stymie you'll limit your ability to grow. So having said all that, I don't think I ever really knew that I would be a judge, but I always thought I could be a lawyer. But at the same time, that was limiting because that's baseline. Had I gone into life with more confidence, I'm sure I could have gone farther.
Tell us what a typical day as a judge looks like.
Well, it depends. I just wanted to say, Fiona said, yeah, she talked a lot about my career as an administrative law judge, but I don't work there anymore. The first line of my bio says now I'm a magistrate judge at DC Superior Court now. I've been doing that for about almost 10 months. And it's interesting because I got the position right in the middle of the pandemic. I was appointed in July of 2020. I do family law. I hear child support and paternity issues. So I actually have a pretty busy calendar. You wouldn't even know that it was COVID because, I do everything virtually. So yes, I hear cases. I put on the robe. Today you're seeing me in a white shirt, but normally I have on the black robe and people call in and I do the cases all day. My day starts at 9:30. I hear about 15 cases a day. A lot of them are dealing with people who are are seeking child support and are in difficult situations. So it's pretty an emotionally packed day, but it's a day that I feel like I can give back to DC. DC did a lot to raise me. I was born in DC, but raised in PG County. I feel like I have a responsibility to give back to my community, and being a judge affords me that opportunity. So it's definitely interesting. It definitely requires some patience, but I hear quite a few cases every day.
I want to be a judge when I grow up too, actually a Supreme Court judge.
Very good.
I really think it's important to give back to the community as well.
Yes, that's great.
I'm going to draw some parallels between being a judge and playing chess. First is preparation. Similar to a chess match, preparing for a case is very important and requires diligence and focus. How do you prepare for a case, and what makes good preparation?
That's an excellent point. You know, let me just back up a little bit in that, Sarah, in the sense that in chess, you tend to plan ahead. You're anticipating what the other player is going to do. You're thinking about where he's going to put, where she is going to put her piece. And in a legal case, it's the exact same thing. Whenever you get a new case, you obviously know what your perspective is or what you think you're going to do. But imagine if you only considered your point of view, it'd be pretty narrow, right? But if you know and can anticipate their next move and whether or not what you say or what you file will force them to make an additional move, imagine how much more assertive and strong your argument would be. So that's how a lot of people prepare cases. I would always prepare my cases, but then I would say to myself, what is the likely counter argument? And then do you have a defense of the counter argument? So it is exactly like that, I think, in chess. Every move you make, you know your intention is to get the queen. But at the same time, you also have to anticipate what your move will trigger another person to do. And that is exactly how the law works. Every move has a counter move. And so that, and you have to anticipate, for example, there's a part in the law, for example, if you get testimony, like, for example, you ever heard where a defendant will decide they're not going to testify on their own behalf. You ever heard that before? Where
yes.
They'll say, we're not going to call them to the stand. Because if they call your client to the stand and they open themselves up to questioning, the worry is that will give the other side an opportunity to attack their testimony and perhaps weaken your case. So much like in chess, when you make a move with your pawn or with your knight, and you go, okay, if I move my pawn across the board, is it going to draw an attack that I don't want? The same thing, exact same thing works in the law in the sense that if I put my person on the stand, will I get some good testimony that will support their case? But do I also expose them to a cross-examination that will be much more detrimental? So that same kind of measurement exists in both genres. So it's actually surprisingly very directly correlated.
Wow, that's very similar. Wow, I love that analogy. And it's so tactical. And it really just emphasizes
100%.
Yeah, your preparation. You're only as good as your preparation and
yeah.
Your tactical thinking there.
I 100% agree. In a chess game, you have to pinpoint the important moves to focus on because there's so many possibilities and limited time. As a judge, how do you identify the important issues in a case?
So I'm thinking it's not exactly the same correlation, but for example, if you're in a criminal matter, right, and you're the prosecution, you must establish that the defendant did the criminal act. For example, if you're talking about burglary, the crime of burglary has elements. So you have to prove the taking and the carrying away the personal property of another. With the intent to permanently deprive at night. Yes, it is at night. So there are five parts. So therefore, in order to prove that, you have to prove each portion of that crime. So the taking, the carrying away, the personal property of another with the intent to permanently deprive at night. So if you have those five things, you must show. So you have to figure out how you're going to show that and how you're going to prove it in court. So just like you described, Sarah, where you're trying to get your queen to get the king, you know, across the board, you're going to plan each step. So I'm going to plan each element like you plan each move. It is very similar. And it's interesting, the more I think about this, I mean, chess is a really good connection to what everything in life is about. Everything is about a plan. I will tell you, for me, I've always been one of those people who always had, I look down because I have it, a journal, like trying to figure out what the next step is. I don't understand people who can go through life and not have a plan, or at least a thought of a plan, because I have a planner back that dates back to when I was in college, because I always felt like I was trying to figure out what was next. So again, I would imagine in chess, it's the same. When you sit down at the board, you probably have in mind, you know, the first two or three moves, or maybe the entire game you might have planned out in your mind before you even start. The law and a good case runs in the same manner.
That seems like it really correlates with chess. In chess, you enter complicated positions and they can tire you. Yet you still have to evaluate the positions objectively to find the next best move. Tell us about how you handle hard decisions and evaluate them fairly. What's the hardest decision that you have made?
One of the difficulties now, see, as a judge, let me tell you what's hard. As a judge, you have to be impartial. So I went from being working in labor and employment and doing public defender work to not having a position. So when you listen, you can't allow your personal feelings to play a role. I, unfortunately, am very emotive, you know, where I actually really care about what happens to people. I'm fortunate. My husband is also a judge, and he can be very, I call him not unfeeling, but very strategic and doesn't listen. But as a parent, I care, you know, about children, and I care about the case. I care about the outcome. So I think what's difficult for me, and I also think it probably relates to chess too, because I'm sure you care about winning. But I think I've heard some really terrible cases that, because of my limitations, I have to not allow my emotions to make decisions for me. So I can't tell you one specific case, because there's many, but a lot of nights I've stared up at the ceiling, you know, at night, hoping that I did the right thing for everyone. It's important to care about all of the parties, but I am bound by what the law requires. So I guess very little I can do beyond what the law allows. So I wish I could tell you one in particular, because there's many. But I spent a lot of time tossing and turning and hoping I did the right thing.
Oh, this resonates a lot. Even with chess, a lot of times you think of it as sort of a cold, objective, like logical game. But, you know, the way I approach it, I really care for my pieces. Like if I want to, you know, send a piece out into enemy territory or sacrifice it hurts. And I don't think this is how everyone approaches the game, but that's how I approach it. So
no, that's right. That's right.
And your husband must be able to help, because he's not attached to the case, because he's not dealing with the case, but he can sort of help you understand different points of views.
He can, but the problem is, when you're in court, he's not there. It's just me, and I'm sitting there alone, and I have to make those decisions. And guess what? He's not there to help. And then if he were, then would it be my decision or would it be his? It's important. I'm in backup also too. My husband primarily does criminal law, let me back up. My husband is the presiding magistrate judge, so don't get him excited because he thinks he's my supervisor. He is not. I can't say, hi, I'm on the bench. What should I do here? The cases and the decisions have to be made then. And there is no, it's for me to help decide. So he can't really help, but sometimes, you know, we do discuss what's happened after, you know, and he'll say, you know, sometimes I'll say, what do you think? And, you know, but I can't change my mind. It usually happens right then. Just like in chess, have you ever just known that the step you're going to, the piece you're going to move is going to be perfect, and then you realize, oh my God, how did I miss the rook? How did I miss that? And then you're sitting there trying to figure out how to get out. Oh my, I'm like, you big dummy. How'd you miss that? That happens to me all the time. So it's very, very similar. Very similar.
I was actually playing a game of chess today, and my opponent made this really good move, where he was forking my bishop.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I thought it was checkmate. And so I realized that it wasn't checkmate, so I was sort of relieved. And just before I was going to move my king, well, actually not move my king, but move my bishop to get out of danger, I realized, oh man, when the queen takes check, I have to move over, and then she can skewer my king and my rook, and then she'll get my rook.
Yeah.
But, however, I was already a rook ahead, so I wasn't too upset about that, but I also took a chance with it because I knew that I could maneuver my queen faster than my opponent can maneuver their queen up to checkmate their king. And so that's what happened. And before I checkmated, my opponent resigned. And so...
So it worked out. So it's the exact same thing. It's the exact same thing. I mean, it's life lessons. And that's in everything, Sarah. Everything in life is going to be that way. It's such a phenomenal... I never thought there was so much of a correlation between chess and real life, but it really is.
What is the most crucial trait for a judge to have?
If I could put them together, I'd say impartiality and being unbiased.
And why?
See, I think the thing about life is that people think that they come into this world with no bias. The people think, oh, I don't discriminate against anybody. I'm completely impartial. I have this kind of friend. We are born with impartiality. We're born with bias. We're born with limitations. And if you can find a way to check those biases and check the things that make you partial to anything, you're so much more powerful. So I think that's important. And the other one thing I think is, believe it or not, the ability to listen. I like to talk, but the truth of the matter is I got to listen a lot. And that's a big deal.
What advice do you have for young girls who have big career aspirations?
Dream even bigger. See, I think I told you that I knew I was really smart. I knew that I could compete with anybody in my class. But my dream was, see, like I think you just said, Sarah, you not only want to be a judge, you want to be a Supreme Court judge. That's big. That's huge. I dreamed only just to be a lawyer. Do you see what I'm saying? My dream was, oh, that's a big dream. No, it's not. That's a small one by comparison. I didn't know at the time what was truly possible. I often think, imagine if I had allowed myself to dream even bigger. I'm an old lady, but I do watch TikTok. Yes, I do. And there's a TikTok video. I do watch TikTok. There's a TikTok video where this guy gets his SAT scores. And the SAT score, he wasn't a very good student. He gets his SAT scores and his score was like a 1480, which was really very good. And all of a sudden he goes, well, wow, I guess I must be smarter than I think. And suddenly he went from being in the community college to applying to Columbia, and he gets in and he's all great. And then they tell, and he gets great grades. He ends up going to be a doctor. Turns out 10 years later, they tell him that actually your score was a mistake. You really only got a 980 or whatever. But the point of the story is, had he gotten the 980 he would have never believed what was possible for himself. But when he got the score that was wrong, it encouraged him to believe that everything was possible. I think that for women, we're always told, or people always were surprised that, they're always surprised to see me. They're always surprised that I'm a Black woman who could play chess with all the boys in the class and beat every one of them. They're always surprised that I could be, like when my husband and I go out to dinner, no one ever assumes that you're serving two judges, because the world's vision of women of color is so small. Even though we see lots of good things about women that are doing well, it's still a surprise. It shouldn't be a surprise, because I didn't know my limits. Like I know about you, Sarah, that all the things that you do, and that's what you should be doing, not being surprised that you're doing. And I'm sure that Fiona is the same. It's the limitations. Like, you know, everyone loved watching Queen's Gambit, you know, the show on Netflix, whatever. But really what they're so surprised is because it's a woman. But we all know that women do this all the time. But it's society that places these limitations on us that slows down the progress. You guys are showing the world that we do this with one hand behind our back. The same thing with golf or anything else you do.
And you should expect it.
Yeah, because here we come. One more time. Here we come. I mean, it's just, and my daughter is 18, about to go to college, and you guys are unflinching. I think the world is not ready because it's going to be a tsunami of great women. It's just a matter of time.
Well, that's a really inspiring way to end. Thank you so much, Judge Sherry Beatty Arthur, for joining us.
Sure.
It's been such an inspiring conversation, and we're super honored to have you.
I really enjoyed it.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. I'm completely honored. It's been a pleasure. You guys are going places. I'm going to be glad to know you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was a conversation with Magistrate Judge Sherry Beatty Arthur. You can find all of our other past interviews on our website, chessgirlsdc.org. There you can also learn more about the organization, mission, and events. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.